Now we get on the trail of the Illuminati, just in time for the opening of a movie centered on this secret society. Angels and Demons will be in theaters tomorrow, carrying on the battle between the Illuminati and the Vatican that began with the Da Vinci Code. Both, of course, based on Dan Brown's best-selling thrillers. NPR's Karen Grigsby Bates leads the chase.
In the opening of Angels and Demons, Rome awaits the College of Cardinals' election of a new pope.
Thousands are gathered in St. Peter's Square. The new pope has yet to be selected.
But before he is, strange and bloody things begin to happen. The bodies of Vatican clerics are left with grisly hints that can only belong to one group.
That's Illuminati.
Who?
The Illuminati were a secret society dedicated to scientific truth. The Catholic Church ordered a brutal massacre to silence them forever. They've come for their revenge.
No. Historian Ian McNeely at the University of Oregon says Tom Hanks' character, Robert Langdon, is somewhat off the mark.
The Illuminati were real. They were an organization founded in 1776 by a Bavarian university professor named Adam Weishaupt.
But, McNeely says, the Illuminati's war against religion was waged with words, not weapons.
Their aim was to reform society peaceably and not at all to engage in acts of violence.
The violence is left to their fictional counterparts, which are legion. In the movie Laura Croft, Tomb Raider, aristocratic adventurer Laura finds a letter left to her years earlier by her now-deceased father, asking her to foil a heinous plot.
A very little time, and as the planets move into alignment, the world will be in great danger. For the secret society known as the Illuminati, devious, dangerous men.
And women, too, all bent on world domination. In popular culture, the Illuminati are often portrayed as evil, or at least mysterious. They appear in several video games, including Resident Evil 4.
Who are we? Who are we really?
We are the invisible hand. We are the Illuminati. We come before and after. We are forever. And eventually, we will lead them into the day.
The Secret Society even shows up in parody. In one episode of the Fox sitcom American Dad, a shadowy group of elites go to great lengths to protect the secret of the origins of peanut butter. Teenager Steve Smith discovers this after an Indiana Jones-like chase through a rapidly crumbling cave to secure a jar with the truth inside. Steve is shocked to find that his dad, Stan, is involved in the peanut butter conspiracy.
I'm sorry, son.
When were you going to tell me you were part of the Illuminati?
It's a nice play on words, joining the Illuminati with thousands of nutty conspiracy theories. So why are we so interested in secret societies? George Johnson began writing about conspiracy theories more than 20 years ago. Since he wrote Architects of Fear, Conspiracy Theories and Paranoia in American Society, Johnson says interest in the Illuminati has only grown.
You used to have to really seek this out, but now, you know, you just put Illuminati in the Google box and it's just astonishing what pops up. The idea that it's all just a few puppeteers makes it all seem simple.
And Johnson says, belief in the Illuminati's powers is amazingly flexible. Apparently, the Illuminati are to paranoid conspiracy theorists what tofu is to cooks. What you taste depends on how you sauce it.
It's just kind of this legend that flows through history and gets, contorted according to, you know, people's own needs.
Oregon historian Ian McNeely says the Illuminati are often presumed to manipulate the world economy through high-ranking members of the global financial community.
One of the staples, for example, of conspiracy theory is the idea that the Illuminati control the Federal Reserve.
Despite the current U.S. economic meltdown, McNeely hasn't heard so much of that this time around.
You know, maybe we're growing up.
Or maybe that means that if the Illuminati were running the Fed, the economy would be in better shape. Karen Grigsby Bates, NPR News.
For a sneak peek at clips from the movie, visit our website at npr.org.
Previously on All Things Considered.
Today, the trustees of those two programs confirmed that the bad economy is having a big effect.
Well, unless the Congress and the President do something about it, it means that Social Security would only be able to pay out about 75% of the currently processed.
Okay, not quite the same thing as you'd hear after previously on Grey's Anatomy or previously on 24. But reporter Nate DeMayo is going to take us through the pre-show recap now, not of our own program, but of those other ones. He'll explain why right now there are so many densely plotted, heavily serialized shows on television, shows that require the recap.
It didn't used to be like this. It used to be that the only time a story on TV got so complicated that you needed a refresher to help you out was for one of those very special two-part sitcom episodes.
The Brady Boys never thought their vacation in Hawaii would end up in an ancient burial cave. Then Greg is wearing the idol when he has a terrible wipeout while surfing.
But things have changed, and perhaps nothing embodies that change more than three simple words.
Previously on Lost.
It's funny, television business has changed dramatically in the last few years because serialized shows were dead for a long time.
Carlton Cuse is one of the executive producers of Lost. He says today's viewer has the tools to follow intricate plots that writers just couldn't pull off before. Things like DVRs and streaming video and DVD box sets. We are living in the golden age of the previously on. Shows like Grey's Anatomy and Gossip Girl and Big Love and Desperate Housewives all come with a pre-show primer. Q says that all of the subplots of backstories of subplots of tangents on TV these days can keep a network executive up at night, worried about losing overwhelmed viewers.
While most network executives would acknowledge that it's impossible to catch the audience up, they feel like they can't just abandon trying to do that. So they put the previously on, you know, just in some hope that if you just are watching on the network, you're going to be able to kind of follow along.
In the first couple of seasons of a serialized show, the previously on typically serves the new viewer. That person who's heard good things about a show but could use a scorecard to tell the players apart.
Previously on The West Wing.
My name is Sam Seaborn, and I'm the Deputy Communications Director.
I'm Josh Lyman, Deputy Chief of Staff.
But by a show's third and fourth and fifth season, all pretense of catering to the lay viewer is set aside. Damon Lindelof is another executive producer on Lost.
At this point in the game, the previously on is just to satiate the sort of, oh yeah, contingent, so that when you're watching the show, you go, oh yeah, that's why Jack's so angry. Oh yeah, that's why Saeed has just melted out of the jungle with the gun.
Lindelof says he thinks of previously on Lost as the equivalent of his wife sitting down right before the show starts and asking him what he needs to know. He's only got 30 seconds to tell her. But you can say a lot in 30 seconds.
There's a scene where Faraday is explaining why he's going to try to change the time stream with the hydrogen bomb, and that was actually a 6.5 minute long scene. We can actually reduce it down to 2 lines. We can name that tune in 7 seconds.
And just how exactly do you plan on destroying this energy?
I'm going to detonate a hydrogen bomb.
That's all you need to know.
He says there are pitfalls to previously ons. If you're watching Lost or any other show with a recap, and suddenly there's a character you haven't seen in several episodes, you're just not going to be surprised when they show up in the middle of this episode. Jeff Alexander is the author of The TV Guide to Life. He says for the most part, that just adds to the pleasure of watching the show. It's a tease. But sometimes...
Previously on 24.
It's a spoiler.
The funny thing about 24 is they always have these sort of freeze frames introducing an individual character. Now, if it's a character who hasn't previously gotten one, like if it's a minor character like someone's boss or a coworker, there's a pretty good sign that that person's going to die that episode.
Lost season finale airs tonight. The network has been hyping it as a special 3-hour season finale event. It's not. It's a 2-hour season finale. The first hour is a recap of what's happened this season. It's a giant previously on. For NPR News, I'm Nate DeMayo.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
People say it takes a thief to catch a thief, and we apply a similar principle. It takes a movie maker to recommend a movie.
We get advice on what to rent or download from Hollywood Players. And this morning, our advisor is producer Lauren Shuler Donner.
Her movies include St. Elmo's Fire.
Not to mention Free Willy, You've Got Mail.
And a little thing called the X-Men franchise, including X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is in theaters now.
When we asked her what to watch at home, Lauren Shuler Donner started with a classic from 1954. On the Waterfront is set in the corrupt world of New York City longshoremen.
You know what? It's a perfect script, perfectly cast, and perfectly directed. At the core of the movie, it's about redemption. It's about this kid, Terry, played by Marlon Brando, who everybody calls a bum. He works on the docks, which is really about the docks in New York City and how the union is corrupt and they were taking advantage of the workers.
This is the 1950s. You've got all these lovely shots of the New York skyline in the 50s.
Yes, beautiful. And Terry decides ultimately to do the right thing. First of all, Brando is really good. He's the tough guy, but he's so vulnerable. I cry every time I watch him.
I bet there are millions of Americans who have said or heard themselves say, I could have been a contender, and they don't realize this is the film that it came from.
This is the film, and this is sort of his turning point. He was a boxer, and his brother had him throw a fight because their mob had bet on the other guy.
You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
We're getting DVD recommendations from movie producer Lauren Shuler Donner, part of our series, and let's move on to a much more colorful film because it's in color, spectacularly so. Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes, Lawrence of Arabia. I think a lot of people's favorite.
We've had a discussion of this once before in this series. Danny Elfman, the composer, focused on the music and how spectacular he thought the music was. Of course, what strikes most people, if they see even a clip of this, is how spectacular the visuals are, the way that the light plays in the desert.
Yes, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Peter O'Toole playing Lawrence and in the desert. There's one classic scene where he comes up upon a sort of a sand mountain and looks around, and the vistas are stunning. The way it's filmed is stunning.
Is this a movie that carries on the small screen?
It carries on the small screen because it is a story well told, and Lawrence is fascinating and Peter O'Toole is fascinating in the role. It is best seen, though, on a big wide screen with enough foot candles on the screen so you can see everything.
Enough foot candles on the screen.
Well, it makes your screen in your local theater bright.
Oh.
So that it is the way that when we film our film, it's intended to be seen. A lot of times, some of the theater owners don't always keep up with keeping the foot candles to the proper brightness.
Well, now, if we're talking about historical dramas, I guess we could continue in that way because you have another movie on your list here. Why did you choose The Battle of Algiers?
Wow. Battle of Algiers, I saw about 30 years ago, and it was so very powerful. First of all, I vowed I'd never see it again. I was shook for days. Now, what's interesting is I went back and I looked up the Battle of Algiers on the internet, and it turns out that the Pentagon played this movie in 2003 as we were entering the Iraqi War.
This is a film about a real Algerian struggle for independence against France.
Yes, it's about the Algerians who are struggling against the French colonial rule. And it sort of revolves around this one revolutionary named Ali Lapointe. And it sort of details this political terrorist campaign. The second half of the movie is about the reaction of the French military who parachute in, and they start their own campaign, and it's a campaign of murder and torture.
Médecin, poignardé.
C'est horrible.
It is an extremely violent movie. It's not for the weak of heart.
You see the torture.
You see the torture. You see on both sides. I mean, one of the reasons that the movie is so powerful is that it is honestly depicted from both sides the way that they waged war, and it is terrible.
Even though you said after seeing it that first time you'd never be able to see it again, have you watched it again?
Yes, because I thought 30 years was a distance. A good enough distance, and I could handle it. I've grown up and I could handle it.
It was just as powerful the
second
time?
It was just as powerful, yes. It really is.
Lauren Shuler Donner, I want to ask about one more film that's on your list. The title is Inside Moves. And there's a guy connected with the film with the name Donner, which I think is the same last name as you.
My God, it is. Yes, Richard Donner is my husband. We've been married 23 great years. Inside Moves has always been my favorite of his movies. It's much different than Dick usually directs. Dick has directed The First Superman, The Omen, All the Lethal Weapons, Conspiracy Theory, Goonies. And Inside Moves is more of a drama. John Savage is the actor who plays a very depressed guy in the beginning of the movie, jumps off a roof and cripples himself, and ends up frequenting a bar where there are a lot of handicapped guys. And really, it's a story about friendship. It's a story how friendship elevates you and makes life worthwhile.
So what happened to you?
Oh, I've been in the hospital for a while.
So?
It
jumped off a building and tried to commit suicide.
Well, you got it all backwards. First you get crippled, then you try to commit suicide.
What drew him to that subject? Do you know, since you happen to know the director?
I think it was a great script by Barry Levinson and Valerie Curtin that drew him to it. Most directors respond to good scripts. We always say, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. So that's what it was.
Lauren Shuler Donner, thanks for coming by.
Oh, thank you so much. I love NPR.
Oh, sweet. You can see the complete list of Lauren Shuler Donner's DVD picks by going to NPR.org. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montagne.